Good day, everybody. We're all sitting around here, all four of us. First time in a long time.
Since Infinity War.
Right, four people.
Wow, yeah. Infinity War.
Yes. Yeah, right?
Oh.
We are
welcome back, Nick.
We are all gathered here today like being in Kevin Wendelcrumb's mind. All four of us. Packed in here in this little tiny recording room.
We are the Horde.
We are the Horde. Yeah, and we're here to discuss the Unbreakable Mythos. But more specifically, more recently, M. Night Shyamalan's Glass.
Hell yeah.
Shyamalan.
Oh, we're not talking about Venom?
Ding dong?
No.
Fucking hell.
That was the last time you invited me to do this thing.
Yeah, well, everyone decided that we weren't going to do a Venom episode because they didn't like the movie. Because
y'all couldn't handle it. I hear you. I hear you. It's a classic. It's a great film. I hear you. I
didn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
5 out of 10. Which is amazing in my eyes.
Okay, cool. So
numbers
Venom gets like several different ratings. It's like, oh well, I give it a 5 out of 10 as an actual objective score, but I give it like a full max 10 out of 10 out of like just being a terrible movie that's enjoyable to watch.
Yeah.
Oh, I also give it a 7 out of 10 for the effects work and the acting by what's his name, Eddie Brock. Oh wait, Tom Hardy. But how can I tell? The guy who played Eddie Brock so well, he became Eddie Brock.
Ah.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about that anti-hero.
No, we're talking about the Tiptoe Man.
What?
That was one of the alternate names for David Dunn.
Tiptoe Man. In the newspapers and stuff. Yeah.
Tiptoe Man. That would have been awesome.
Imagine that origin scene playing out instead of like, who is it? It's the Batman. You just get Cillian Murphy in this movie like, oh God, who is it? Who is it, boss? It's the Tiptoe Man.
Oh, Dad, I didn't hear you come in. Yeah, you didn't. Tip.
God, it's so fucking dumb. And it, like he's listing, his son's listing all the names like, as sometimes you're this, sometimes you're that, the Guardian or whatever, but it seems they settled on, the Overseer. And Bruce Willis looks at him and says, never mention the Tiptoe Man again.
Yeah.
One of those shining moments in a film that people keep claiming, oh, Bruce Willis is so woefully underused. And it's like, when he's used pretty well.
Yeah.
Same goes for Sam Jackson. They're used pretty damn well.
Now that I'm thinking about it, honestly, Bruce Willis probably wasn't in half the fucking scenes he was in. They probably had a stunt double in the hoodie. So he only had like 7 lines.
Yeah.
He only had about 7 minutes worth of actual FaceTime.
Well, yeah.
He's like, I'm not going to do this action scene. I'll take a nap. So let's get someone else.
Yeah.
Well, there's Jeremy Johns on YouTube. He said, actually, if you look at the movie this way, because people say, it can't really choose an identity. It doesn't know what it wants to do. It can't pick a tone. He said, well, look at it this way. The first act belongs to David Dunn.
Yeah.
Second act is Kevin Wendelcrumb.
Oh, definitely.
Third act goes to Glass, Eliza Price.
Yeah.
And it's like, when you look at the movie that way, that's like a brilliant, like all the worlds collide. So it's like, he's in it quite a bit for the beginning. It's like all his story at the beginning there.
Yeah.
Him looking for the Horde.
Right. And he kind of disappears after their first run-in.
Yeah.
Because they lock him up and it's like, oh,
right.
There goes Bruce Willis. Except the occasional kind of, oh, hi, he's still here.
Yeah.
But I don't know. They could have used a stunt double, which they did in the original. Because I was going to say, it's one the best scene in the entire trilogy, but it's also the best scene probably in my best pick for best scene ever in superhero genre. It's, when he falls in the pool in Unbreakable?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he reemerges as who he's supposed to be. It's like the symbolism of he gets knocked over a balcony, falls in the pool, starts panicking, and then the kids help him out. And it's playing like that epic, majestic score. And you're like, well, and then he steps out of the pool. You don't see his face from that point on in the entire scene. Because he stands up and all you see is his feet. And he kind of gets taller and taller. And he like rises above the kids.
Yeah.
And it's an over-the-shoulder shot playing that epic score by, not Harry Gregson Williams, James Newton Howard.
Yeah.
And it kind of pans down to his legs. And you see the bottom of his trench coat. But it's blowing in the wind like a cape. So it's like you can imagine him standing there like Superman. That's kind of the moment he literally falls into a pool of his own fears and emerges as the hero he's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And then he goes inside and kills the Orange Man, like really violently, shockingly, just kind of strangles him.
Well, the common theme throughout this entire series is that M. Night Shyamalan's like, how goofy would these fights be between superheroes like in real life?
Right.
Like if they actually fought against people, it wouldn't be just punch, punch. Grab somebody by the leg and fling them through a building. It's like, it's messy. It's
ugly.
There's spit. There's saliva. Yeah. There's teeth.
Actually, I think it was like the final fight at the end. You don't really see them fighting that much. You kind of see the inside of the armored car he puts the two girls in, and you see it getting like dented.
Yeah.
Which was really cool. You weren't actually seeing their fight. You were kind of seeing people reacting to what's like going on around them.
It's pretty cool.
It's a more gritty, grounded take on that.
Now, is that because they wanted it to be realistic, or is it because they didn't have the budget for good choreography?
Yes.
It's both.
You have to figure both.
I accept both.
It's Blumhouse, man. They only got the actor's wages to make this damn thing.
Yeah. And it's got a lot more money going towards it than Split did, but still, I guess not a whole lot. Yeah.
Speaking of Split, man, do you think James McAvoy's back has to hurt carrying this whole film? Just
that's why he's swole, bro.
Right, man.
He's Macabro, man.
This guy got swole just from carrying the production alone as this character. My God.
Yeah, I gotta say, we recently got the Oscar nominations going out, and I know it's an M. Night Shyamalan movie, but James McAvoy plays 24 people in this movie.
They had five more than the previous. My favorite being the professor in Japanese cinema, 1950 to 80s specifically. That was the greatest. Yeah. My name is Dr. Jackie Pearl or whatever, and I am a professor in, he kind of had a bit of a stutter, Japanese cinema, specifically 1950s to 80s. Can I ask, why am I in the psychiatric ward?
Yeah.
And you're just yes. He probably improvised that.
Oh, they're probably.
Just come up with one more personality.
Wing it, my man. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he is such a talented actor. No one else. Can you think of a single other actor right now who could do that?
What's her face from Orphan Black?
Oh, Tatiana Maslany.
But she didn't switch back and forth in a single scene.
Oh, not all at once.
She filmed one character, and then they green screened her in the same scene as another character.
Right.
And so, that's what was going on there.
His death scene's the perfect example. He's dying, and all of his personalities are like
trying to fight for the light.
Right, so it's kind of oh, we're powering down. I'm glitching. And he's going through all the personalities in Casey's lap, basically. And you're just my God, give this guy an Oscar. He's changing, his eyes are dilating and everything, and he's changing his facial expressions and how he holds himself, even while dying in pain. And you're he had to do all of that as an actor.
Yeah.
Yeesh.
It's fucking great.
That's probably the best scene in the movie. Stuff,
They're probably running out a little long, but it was just kind of cool seeing them all go one-on-one.
I know.
If you add them all together, it's equal to how Shakespearean characters die, just one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely, I gotta say, out of the three, Unbreakable is my favorite, just because
it's hard to top.
Yeah,
even Quentin Tarantino has an intro on the DVD where he's "This is." He does an intro, he does a commentary that only lasts 5 minutes, and then he's "Peace out, you'll watch the movie." But it's just him sucking its dick for 5 whole minutes, and then that's his intro / commentary. I think it's on the Buena Vista version I have, which is my favorite DVD because those old Buena Vista series releases were so fucking cool. It comes with a comic written by I don't even remember who wrote it. I think it was Jason Aaron or something. And it's a slip cover and it folds out and you can see it's got this outside's the broken glass and you open it up and inside they're all drawn by probably Alex Ross, I think, and he did the art for that little comic book. And that's my favorite DVD I have. But it comes with an intro by Quentin Tarantino. He said, "This is the quintessential Superman mythos."
Nice.
The idea is what if Superman was here, but he didn't know he was Superman. He didn't see himself as anything other than completely boring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yada yada.
And to be honest, it's over the years my favorite M. Night movie has varied, gone around, but it's settled on Unbreakable. It really has. I was a big Sixth Sense and Hate Me If You Will Village fan for many years.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Lady in the Water. That's your other thing.
But I do love Lady in the Water. A lot of people sort of give it a bad rap because the critic character, but honestly, it's a fairy tale he was telling his kids.
Yeah, that's the one that's just ultra cringe kind of. Yeah. Everything else is just intriguingly cringe.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I say that in a good way. I see that movie and I like it, but I'm just I get what you're doing.
Yeah, well, everyone rags on it because he has that critic character is just critics don't know what they're talking about. I'm the best thing ever.
Right, but so blatantly that's his criticism on critics. Yeah. And we get it. That doesn't excuse the fact that some of your films suck, but
If you ignore that specific character, it's a fairy tale he was telling his kids.
Yeah.
And they asked him if he could make it into a movie, so he did.
Right. But that film also faltered because the marketing was, it was supposed to be a horror film or some shit.
Oh yeah,
he was the master of thrillers. He was supposed to be the next Alfred
exactly.
Hitchcock. But then now you look back at his career, he tried everything at this point. He's tried every genre.
I think the only one he didn't really try and do was romantic comedy.
Oh, Lord. Oh, that'd be amazing. The more I'm thinking about it, like, ooh, they'd be so quirky and Shyamalan-y.
I want an M. Night musical. Get on it.
Yeah.
Wait. Oh, God, the Visit wasn't a romantic comedy?
Oh, my God.
No.
speaking of that critic guy, the critic, he talks about, and this is the part where the jump scare comes. Some of that dialogue made it in the glass.
Yes.
Like, even his mom's like, honey, to Sam Jackson, like, this is a special issue. Tell us, how does a special issue end? And you're sitting there like, this isn't dialogue. This is exposition. Like, ew, it's the self-referential dialogue, and it's coming back.
Actually, if you remember, the name of his store was Special Edition.
Yeah.
Well, so I don't think she was referencing the comic book special editions. I think she was referencing the store at that point.
No, because he said, he was saying earlier, this is the final act. This is the special edition. This is the two, DC and Marvel coming together. You guys are going to have your fight. And it's the final theme of the film is, as spoilers, spoiler cast, he's basically dying. The Beast finds out the twist, which we'll talk about in a little bit, and mortally wounds him. And she's going, honey, this isn't the way the special edition was supposed to go, the special issue. And he goes, no, mom, this wasn't a special issue. This was an origin story.
Yeah.
And then, like, dies. And you're like, what do you mean origin story? And that's when everything starts to kind of unravel, both sort of in rushing the ending, but unravel as, like, the mysteries come.
That's when you kind of think, like, maybe M. Night doesn't really know a whole lot about comics, as he lets on, because a special edition, it's not, like, something pivotal to, like, the main canon or anything. It's just, like, a one thing. Like, like, it's always a fun little thing that will sell for limited runs. Because because if it's, like, really important, comics companies aren't going to sell it for a limited or special because they won't make a lot of money.
Right. Well, if he had said origin story from the beginning, it wouldn't have been the same.
Maybe. And or he just said, like, this is like, this is like an event comic or something like that. Or something like that.
He's like, remember, mom, my name's on this movie. This is my trilogy. Yeah. I'm the main. This is my origin. What? How is it my origin? I'm the one that breaks this worldwide. I'm the one that gets the news out, and I was right the whole time.
That's what I kind of had to infer after all that.
That's
know.
Kind of the ultimate message of how Glass, when it ends, that's what you feel like, oh, it was always Elijah Price's story. You know, the Overseer didn't matter, the Beast didn't matter, Kevin Wendell Crumb didn't matter, they were just all kind of his.
You wouldn't his fucking know that match. He comes in like 50 minutes into the movie.
Yeah, there's like, there's no celebration at all. They're like, oh, we have Sam Jackson here. It's like, where's the big intro? Where's the swelling music when he rolls in? Like, I think when we first meet him, it's POV. It's the guy, like, taking care of him.
Yeah, it's the guy giving him the soup or whatever.
And it's like POV. He's like, who could this be? But everyone in the audience is like, it's Sam Jackson. Just fucking show him. But then the movie does. They just kind of go back and just show him. Like, oh, no big reveal. No, like.
He tries to, like, what? No, clean I something mean, off his mouth. He's just like, motherfucker. Or something like that.
Yeah, like, there should be some big Sam moment where you're like, hey, he's back. Yeah, shit.
Well, actually, that kind of reminds me. There's been some recurring themes throughout the series, and the mundanity of characters has been a huge theme. Like, you'd expect the swelling music, but you just instead get mundaneness, like nothing really happening.
Right.
And it's happened throughout all the movies. Like, you know, when you see David Dunn for the first time, it's very bland, and it's not until the very end when he becomes the hero that the music swells.
He comes out of the pool, and that's like the most majestic scene.
Unbreakable
ever.
Man.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Split, you're very confused. There's hardly any music in Split at all, to be honest. It's very, very subtle.
Actually, I found out a cool thing about this is that when the Beast comes around and there's that very eerie grinding of bass strings and like cellos, it's actually a synthesized cello scraping cello strings, but it's also synthesized detuned zoo noises.
Ooh.
You're hearing an elephant and a lion mostly.
That makes sense.
Huh. So you just hear and it's like it's a lion, but it's been detuned and synthesized.
Oh my god, because he's a beast.
Well, also
because they're under the zoo.
Not just that, everything he put into the Beast apparently was he was subconsciously learning things about animals in the zoo.
Because
throughout multiple times throughout Split, in the different personas he has, he talks about animals. So all the persona, at least the Horde only constitutes three personalities. The Horde is only Patricia, Hedwig, and Dennis.
Yeah.
They are the Horde. Every other personality doesn't like them. They were trying to
during Split.
Yeah, they were trying to get help basically, but those three Horde kept taking the light.
The Horde expands in this one.
A little bit.
I think Jade joined them.
There's like some that joined the Beast and some that didn't.
The diabetic Asian woman joined the
Beast. She's like 18 or 19.
Whatever. Yeah.
But Dennis.
The one who's flirting with the orderly. Nurse. And,
yeah.
He/she was a delight.
Yeah. And Dennis actually defects and regrets what he did, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
But the Horde, they constantly talk about animals throughout Split. Because there's a part where he's making the sandwiches for the she. It's Patricia. She's making the sandwiches for the girls. And she's like, do you know, I found out the tigers are crepuscular. Do you know what that means? And one of the girls goes, that means they can only eat in the dark. They only eat at night. Yeah, you're very smart. And then Hedwig says something about, I think, elephants. And so you're like, they're picking up things from the zoo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's what's making the Beast persona.
Well, that's where Evan works.
Also, on the news, they say the Horde apparently has 24 personas and also has the abilities of, you hear it on the news, of the animals from the zoo in which Kevin Wendell Crumb works. So it's literally set in dialogue in the mid-credit scene, beginning credit scenes.
Yeah.
That's why the theme is synthesized animals.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I didn't know about that. But that composer, it isn't James Newton Howard. The different guy did both of these, and he's fucking good.
Yeah.
I've been listening to both soundtracks the past week or so, and he's really good.
Unbreakable is really good, but whenever I listen to it for longer than, like, 10 minutes, I get, like, super depressed to the point where, like, if it were raining, I would stand out in the rain with my headphones on. and not a poncho. I'd stand out in the rain with my trench coat. Is full on emo kid, you know, staring up at the rain with it pouring down on me.
No, that's a really great bleak film. It is, man.
It mostly is. How it ends. It only uplifts like
throughout the whole thing. Just all mopey, like a slave power or something. And at the end, hey, guess what? Oh, bless you're you. Bad. Sorry. God bless you.
Sorry, thank you.
I love you.
Yeah, it's okay. Everyone loves to rag on Unbreakable, and it's like, I guess you might as well rag on all three of these at this point, because it's like, wouldn't he have, like, realized he wasn't sick or whatever? And it's like, no, the idea is he thinks he's so, like you said, mundane.
Yeah.
He never thought about it. That's the idea. He never thought about the fact, you know, such and such. And, like, the reveal is, like, oh, you thought he did get hurt at one point because he put away a football career. And it's like, oh, no, it's the car wreck that they're talking about. It's because his wife kind of got injured and he put away his career to help her recuperate and then married her and all that. So it was never him that was injured. You see why, because he saves them both from the car wreck and lifts the damn car and shit.
Yeah.
Which is, like, another great scene in that movie. But I don't know. I think I have to go with Split. Sorry to say, but Split probably is the favorite in all three of these.
Right.
Split's the one that's the most holy shit. Like,
it's between those two for me. I'm very split. Yeah.
God damn it.
Yeah.
We tried so hard not to have this happen.
I knew.
I knew it was going to happen. That's why I wanted them here.
We tried so hard not to be the a billionth people on
That'll
this
That'll be my one. That's just my one. I get one. God damn it. Everybody gets one split.
Okay.
Split bun.
Okay. Join the masses, sir.
Just one. Okay, maybe two. Give me a while. I'll think of another one.
Okay, cool.
I thought we were done with this joke.
Wow.
But I see crumbs are left.
Oh, because character name.
What's a bun to?
Yeah.
Yes.
It took me a little bit.
What price are we paying here?
I'm still trying to think of more splits.
Okay, you got your second.
For those of you out there who've been paying attention to the Instagram and Twitter feeds, Derek has used all three of those puns in a single tweet.
I forget how I did
advertising it. Advertising for this very podcast.
I sort of remembered how.
Yeah. Now, of course, it's the pundagram.
Hold on, real quick, real quick. All right. We all like it.
Yes.
The three men here.
Like what?
How about Madison?
Oh, now, okay. Put the spotlight on
Wow, way
on
to,
me.
Like, highlight.
Shit.
We're talking about Splinter or Glass or
quiet
what?
I've been for the past hour long.
Okay.
She should not be quiet, and I feel like we need to hear maybe a contrasting opinion.
Okay. Unbreakable. All three of the movies are fine to me. They're, like...
Only fine?
Yeah, fine. Yeah, like, Unbreakable is... fine. Unbreakable is okay. I think Bruce Willis is very good in that film. I really like the chemistry between him and his son in that
Joseph,
film.
I think
yeah, Joseph. I like the father-son relationship. I think that the sequence when it's the mom, David, and Joseph, and Joseph's pointing the gun at David.
Yeah.
And he's going, you're just going to heal from this. That was a really, really tense and really, really well done scene.
Yeah.
I like that scene a lot. That's one of the few that have kind of stuck with me. That's a good, solid 7 out of 10 for me.
Split?
Okay, so the thing about Split...
Mm-hmm.
is when it first came out, there was a bunch of controversy surrounding it. mainly because M. Night Shyamalan, when he made the film, did no research into the disease that...
DID.
Yeah, that Kevin's got. Identity disorder. Yeah, so he did like zero to no research when he wrote the film, and he just sort of made everything up when it comes to Kevin and his disease and everything that caused it and how the personalities work and stuff like that. So,
well, to be fair, like everyone's been saying, you know, it is essentially a comic book movie.
Yeah.
If you got hit with gamma radiation, you're not going to become the Hulk.
No.
But
fucking die.
But at the same time, it also wasn't. It wasn't advertised as a. It kind of goes back into the marketing thing.
No, yeah, it wasn't advertised.
It's not.
It was a backdoor sequel that no one knew.
Yeah, not only that, but it wasn't advertised as, oh, it's a comic book movie. It was advertised as this, like,
just a thriller.
This thriller and suspense film. And normally when you do any sort of movie, there's some sort of basis. In reality, there's some sort of basis in reality and like actual scientific research, especially when it comes to stuff like this, because like it's a mental disability. You don't just walk in and start. You don't fuck with that kind of stuff. You don't sit there and because there's enough stigma and enough problems surrounding how people look at mental illness and mental disorders, anyways.
Right.
Like. A bunch of people would feel the same way if M. Night Shyamalan decided to try and write an autistic character and did no research into autism.
Right.
You know, even though, DID is a lot less on the known scale. Spectrum of people who understand it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, there was no research gone into it. So I went into Split not looking at it as, okay, this is not... It's not a real movie, I guess. It's not like, I'm not going to go into this and...
That's the thing everyone thought about a lot of M. Night films for a while.
Yeah, like, I'm just not going to... I'm not going to walk into this. Yeah.
What is this?
It's an M. Night Shyamalan experience. It's
just, right. Yeah, it was a movie. Like,
It's fascinating. All right, that's like a cool. That's a legitimate reason, but that's also the reason why I got... excited for Split for some reason.
He's
going to handle Split personality disorder.
Yeah.
You can barely handle elderly disorder from the last film.
He can barely handle Alzheimer's and dementia. Canon that's gonna be fully established insane. Because of that, you know, Avatar.
And it was, exactly. Like for multiple different reasons.
The Avatar thing, I still don't blame him for that. I blame the producer.
That's probably studio being like, you got to fit this into an hour and a half movie.
Right.
From what I've been told, from what I've read about everything and interviews and everything, for Avatar, he had his hands tied behind his back.
Yeah.
Right.
And there was nothing he could do to save that.
I mean, he could have, but... There's always something you can do.
Right. Yeah, you could have been so passionate about the subject, you could have like fought for it. Like, hey, listen, you fucking hired me. I'm a big fan. You could have played that game. Like, I want the scene.
He also could have talked to the people who actually fucking did Avatar instead of leaving that to the producers.
Yes.
Yeah. But, he's like a guy that kind of just rolls with it. If it's not entirely his ideas.
He's like, okay. Anyway, so I walked into... Yeah. So I watched Split, thinking of it more as like a fantasy film than a thriller or a suspense film or any sort of...
That's kind of one way to
look at it. I was like, okay, this is just... This is all gobbledygook. This is fake. This is not...
But did you enjoy it?
It was all right. I liked Unbreakable better than Split, I think, even though I'm with you in saying that James McAvoy's a really fucking good actor
in these films.
That's
the Split. To me, that's like the whole, that's what carries it over. Like, Unbreakable, it is probably the best Bruce Willis has ever been. Like, actually, he was pretty good in this, and it's like, when was the last time he was this good? Oh, yeah. I'd say Die Hard, but the last time he was this good was when he played David Dunn.
Glass.
It seems like, wow, ever since Unbreakable, he was just, like, collecting paychecks.
Yeah.
And that movie, he's like, legitimately, like, you never saw him be so morose. Mm-hmm. Like, he was so good and so quiet and introverted and just, like, he was so good.
It's interesting how M. Night Shyamalan can get Bruce Willis to actually behave, but no one other one can.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Apparently, that's the story. He's like, he hit their best buds on this at any other production. He's like, he's a dick. It's like, what does Shyamalan got? I mean, I hear Shyamalan's a really cool guy. That's why I hate when people... Yeah. Slam this guy nonstop because you see interviews and he seems like the brightest guy and not bright as in like super intelligent but like a bright bulb. He's like a light.
He's got a really great personality.
You see some early interviews like when he was doing stuff for Sixth Sense or Unbreakable. He seemed like he not only like was a nice guy but he actually knew like what he was doing. And yeah. Like he has like a, he has like commentary on like almost every scene. Like I do it like this way. And it's like, there's like a really good commentary for like that scene at the end of Sixth Sense where Haley Joel Osment tells his mom, like, I can see dead people. And it's just like a commentary, which is just like, people said like, maybe we should put music at the end of the scene. And I'm like, no, we shouldn't let the music control it. We should let the scene control the scene. And I'm like, yeah, wow, you're being, a genius.
He was being an artist at that point.
See what
he
you want about writing and stuff? Yeah. He still has, if I'm not sure, is he his own director of photography? I wasn't paying attention. Probably not.
Probably
or
not.
He probably has a big hand because he still has it visually.
I want to say he is, but I can't remember.
I think he knows what shots he wants. He's very good at setting up a shot because like, all three of these movies have brilliant storytelling in the camera work.
Oh, definitely.
Like Unbreakable, I was telling David about this earlier, but I wanted to save it for the podcast. Yeah. I gave him a hint. There's something they do with glass throughout all three of these. And it's like the first time you meet Elijah Price, it's through the reflection on a television.
Oh.
Hmm.
Or through a window, and et cetera. When you meet him in the first flashback as a 13 or 12-year-old, also reflected in a television.
Neat.
And a lot of the scenes in his store, you're coming in through a window pane of glass.
Yeah.
And not even that. The window pane has the outside framing, the T framing. So it divides the whatever's going on in his store, him talking with Bruce Willis or a customer, it divides it and makes it look like comic panels.
Hmm.
And so that's all like very distinct and it's all very much on purpose.
Yeah,
he was Shyamalan involved. Wanted that.
Yeah, when he was doing that, he was being more of an artist than a filmmaker. Yeah. At that point when he does stuff like that.
He thinks about the shot first and then goes in.
Right.
Yeah.
Like anytime something bad's about to happen in the film, something's upside down. So like when the son sees the news of the train crash in the very beginning, he's upside down on the couch and you're seeing the POV of him watching the news. It's upside down.
Yeah.
Right. Other points in the movie, things are upside down. Oh, we went to this upside down camera angle because, ooh, Elijah's about to reveal the big twist at the end.
Yeah.
So and so, you know. Yeah. Even at the end when he's pouring orange juice and he kind of winks at his son like, they hear on the news this guy was found and apprehended. And they had that really good scene where the son's like, you did it. And he's like crying. He's like, shh, don't tell your mom. And like, I love that scene where he secretly tells his kid, like, I did it. I'm like a superhero now, you know?
Yeah.
He's pouring orange juice. There's a lot of orange in that scene after he takes out the orange man. So there's all this like symbolism. So like, he very much. I went and looked up a fuck ton of Easter eggs for all three of these movies, so I'm just like randomly spewing them out from my little list.
I found two things that that no one else has mentioned about this movie.
Oh boy, exclusive. Give it to me, man.
Exclusive.
I'm drowning. I'm sorry. Continue.
What is the one thing Kevin never got from his mom?
Like love, attention, friendship, connection of any sort.
How do you express affection to your kids normally? Like
mostly through touch and shit.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically hugs.
Mm.
All right. What's the one thing that gets Kevin to come out at the very end of the movie?
A hug or a contact?
Casey hugs him.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I forgot.
She gives him a very big hug and says his name multiple times.
Yeah.
And it's a very tender, loving hug. Like, I understand you. I appreciate you. The one thing Kevin never got from his mother. What's the one preferred way of murder by the Beast?
Oh, grabbing people around the midsection. Like
he gives them a killer
and he crushes
hug
from behind.
Yeah.
And crushes their spine.
Severs their spine.
The one thing he's always wanted
from
somebody is affection and love and hugs. And his preferred method of murder is hugging someone to death, breaking their spine.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
I missed out on that one.
Yeah, and additionally, this is just a little side thing. What's the one thing that Sarah Paulson says to Mr. Glass?
I don't know.
When she's describing the twist.
Oh, is this at the end?
She said,
yeah,
like,
it's at the end.
Man was not meant to have this much power, this kind of power.
Yeah.
I find that funny because what does Samuel L. Jackson's character in Jumper say multiple times?
That line.
Man is not meant to have this much power.
I never saw Jumper, so I'm like, I'm assuming it's that
Look,
line.
Look, I know it's Jumper and everyone. It's a dumb movie. Yeah. The book's a lot better. Hell of a lot better.
I believe you.
But it's funny that someone is telling Samuel L. Jackson this, and then in another movie, like 10 years ago, he said it to somebody else. So
you're saying M. Night is a big Jumper fan?
Sure.
Yes.
Which is funny because that character...
Sam, you're so great in it. What have you been doing? Oh
the character that Samuel Jackson plays in Jumper isn't a character in the book.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. You told me.
Yeah. Like, doesn't even exist.
He's like Captain Exposition kind of a...
Yeah.
Speaking of which, that happens a lot in I'm Not Shyamalan's films, and it kind of happens in this one a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I love that fucker that works in the comic store. That's so great. Starting in 1938, when... not Joel, not Schumacher, when the Joel Schuster and whoever made up Superman ever since Action Comics number one. You're sitting there like, what the fuck is this shit? And then the end, along with the twist, when Sarah Paulson's in the comic store, who talks like that? Everyone in Shyamalan's films in the background are constantly like spewing exposition, and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
Tudor's like, that's why I love Lex Luthor, because he's the mastermind. He always has a plan, and you never know till it's too late. And she's like, my God. And it's like, if I heard two guys talking to a store like that, my first thought wouldn't be like, I better go check on my plans. I'd just be like, oh, that's kind of neat.
Listen, worst comic book guy ripoff ever.
Yeah, basically, yeah. What's this guy's deal?
He's really into comic books.
I know. I was like, was he making a sales pitch for Detective Comics or DC? Or was he a plant or something? Or what's going on here?
You guys are at a comic book shop. Get excited about comic books.
Was it product
books.
Placement? Or yeah.
Maybe.
I figured that was M. Night Shyamalan.
I do have to ask Madison one more thing. We didn't finish.
Yeah.
Opinions on the movie. Glass.
On Glass?
Because you did Unbreakable, you did Split. You didn't really cover Glass.
Yeah.
Well, what did you think?
Again, none of it was all right. It wasn't like, okay. So,
it's not 22% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, no, it's not. Yeah, it's not 22% on Rotten Tomatoes.
An abortion of a movie.
Yeah, shit like that. Yeah. No, I think all of the performances were really good. I liked Bruce Willis coming back as David Dunn. Samuel L. Jackson did great as Mr. Glass. James McAvoy once again fucking kills it. The girl who plays Casey did really, really well. She does very well playing soft and vulnerable and innocent and caring. Yeah, mm-hmm. She does very, very well at that. I really liked Sarah Paulson. She's always great.
That's
in
she's
things.
Sarah fucking Paulson.
Yeah, she's Sarah fucking Paulson. Yeah.
This is weird. I don't know anything else she's ever been in. Ever.
American Horror Story, every single season,
the
every
big thing
episode.
Is she's in American Horror Story.
She steals every scene
she's
of every
so
episode
good,
she's
yeah.
in.
Yeah,
that, no.
Have you guys seen Bird Box? She dies in Bird Box.
Oh, is she in Bird Box?
Spoilers for Bird Box.
Oh, yeah, now really? We got to put that in the description, Nick.
Oh, anyway. Another spoiler. It's a shit film. Who cares?
Yeah, right, there we go. Anyway, but yeah. Sarah
I haven't seen it.
I haven't either. But
I hope everyone who does that challenge dies. Okay, continue.
Oh, the challenge is stupid.
The challenge
obviously.
Is stupid too. Yeah,
yes, you're Matt Murdock.
But yeah, Matt Murdock did it first. Excuse
was it
me.
You that sent me that? Nick sent me this funny image. How'd it go?
What?
Like, oh man, my show gets canceled, but then the biggest hit comes along where they didn't get their site. What the fuck, Netflix?
Yeah.
Also, it's not that much of a spoiler. It's the first 5 minutes. Get over it.
Oh, yeah,
it's all okay.
She's in a lot. She's been dropping in and out.
Yeah, she does like mostly bit roles. I can't think of one.
Yeah, she mostly
where
does
like
character
the star
stuff. Yeah,
this is the closest beyond television.
Yeah, and she's really good, and I liked her a lot in it, and I liked the general the Mr. Glass is the mastermind behind all of it, and he's pulling all of them together, but he's doing it on purpose because he wants to show the world that superheroes exist, which I thought was really cool.
And using the mirror of our three main characters, that does happen. The mirror being David Dunn's son,
Casey
and
Mr.
Glass's
mom,
who is obviously a 40-year-old woman in heavy makeup.
Yeah.
But the first one, it was the same way.
Yeah.
Well, that one, they just dyed her hair gray.
Yeah.
And you're like, they just dyed your hair gray. And then
Doctor, how was my son?
Yeah, it reminds me of Miami Connection at the end. What's the character's name? My father! I fell out for Jim.
Yeah.
Jim's dad shows up at the hospital, and he's injured. He's like, Doctor, is my son going to be okay? And it's like a 20-year-old guy.
What's her face and glass is way more convincing than that. I give them credit.
But
like, at least they tried to make her look like an old lady.
Yeah.
This one, they just put, like, powder on his head, like, hello, I'm father, man.
Yeah. Hey, guy.
Hello, I am father.
Come in here off the street. We're going to borrow
hello,
you.
Hello,
like,
I am friend dog.
Yeah. Hello, I am Mr. Father Man.
But I like, you said, we were saying Casey was vulnerable, but she has one scene that directly is so, it's almost like something out of a slasher movie sequel or something, where literally they say, listen, the man that had apprehended you, they've apprehended the man that had captured you and your two semi-not friends, you were just kind of invited.
Oh,
to
yeah.
They didn't actually like you, is what you find out at the beginning.
Yeah.
I just want to let you know this as your principal. And then later on, she goes in and talks to Sarah Paulson. She's like, can I see him? And she goes, no. You're the victim. And she gives us very much a look like, ick fucking excuse me. I survived a fight with this motherfucker. What do you mean I'm the victim? I chased him off with my scars.
Yeah, that was really neat. Yeah.
Which they carry on that theme that's one of the criticisms of the movie is a relationship might kind of come off as icky or Stockholm syndrome-y.
A little bit.
A little bit,
I think the theme is they relate. That's how they related to one another, is they both have suffered horrendous abuse.
Oh, definitely.
And so therefore they've related to each other at all. And therefore, think about this. This guy's never had friends in his entire life or a connection at all. Mm-hmm. Therefore, if he has any connection, good or bad, that's the theme here. That's the connection he has with Casey, is that he has a connection at all with somebody.
That's
I need to go back to Unbreakable really quick and like rewatch it. And I need somebody to tell me, is the lady who bumps into David Dunn, that it's supposed to be Kevin's mom, the same actress who plays Kevin's mom in this movie?
It is not the same actress.
No.
And that's why people can't. M. Night Shyamalan said he likes to believe that is Kevin. He has like canonically made it that that is Kevin and his mom.
It'd be really funny if it actually got the same actress.
Right. It's not. Yeah. That's what people called out as BS. But it's not the same actress. And it's like, well, it's been 18 fucking years, idiots. Like, you probably can't get the same woman. Like,
again,
for flashbacks, either she'd look older.
I know the scene you're talking about now. Yeah,
it's the very first time he senses pain and suffering when he bumps into somebody.
He bumps into the lady.
He bumps into the lady who's hurting.
And then he looks at the kid. The kid's like, "Help me!" And he's just
and you hear like the screams in his head, like, "Mom, no!"
Yeah, that's supposed to be Kevin Kendall Crumb.
Just some extra. They didn't think about that ahead.
They probably did not,
because this is supposed to be like a trilogy and all that, but in reality,
it doesn't feel. It didn't start off like that.
No,
like it totally didn't.
Unbreakable came out and Split. He wrote Split like not too long after he did Unbreakable. He just couldn't do it. I don't know if a lot of people know that. That's probably why the writing style for this and Glass seems a little different. It's because they're like decades apart.
Yeah.
And he always talked about the idea of making like an Unbreakable 2 or making it a trilogy, but he said that like in passing.
Yeah. He never sounded like he was serious about it.
Like every time anybody says anything, it's like it's an article, it's on Word.
Right.
But in reality, he's just like, maybe I can make a sequel.
Yeah.
Sure. He went to the internet like, fucking do it.
Kinda.
Do it.
Well, Patton Oswalt, like, I'm sure, helped with that.
Yeah.
Wasn't he on like a Screen Junkies or whatever?
And it was like sequels we want. And he's like, I want Unbreakables.
Unbreakables,
I want like the world breaks open and you discover there's like 12 unique like, X-Men powered up people out there and they all come together because Glass gets them together and there's like a super villain, the rise of a villain and shit.
And
like,
there you go. We kind of got it. Kind of
got that a little bit.
Yeah. But it wasn't nearly as epic as, say, Infinity War. It was just...
No, right.
That's where I think a lot of the criticisms of this are sort of going. It's like they expected... Even it's really sad. I've been listening to the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. You go to the comment sections, it's like from 6 months ago. Like, I can't wait to see David Dunn fight the Beast. And people are like, oh, I'm just imagining it now. This theme is playing when David Dunn takes out the Beast. And people are like, they had all these like dreams. And it's just... It's more like Unbreakable. It's once again more morose and methodical.
Like, who in all honesty thought of that?
A lot of people
the Beast was just gonna like crawl on a building and grab a window and just like start throwing it.
Yes, people were expecting a fight at the Nakatomi, not the Nakatomi Plaza. Wrong Bruce Willis film.
Yeah.
It was another Japanese name.
Yeah.
It was Sakuza Tower.
Kenuchi.
Whatever.
The Sake Tower, whatever.
Haga Hall Tower, yes.
Right. Osaka. It was the Osaka Tower.
Okay.
That was it.
The Red Herring Building.
Right. And you're going, okay, they're gonna have their final battle. And the movie's building up to that, only to pull the Shyamalan, like, that was never the idea. That was what I said I was gonna do. The twist is I never intended to make it any further than this long.
Yeah, that was the small twist. Right. And then there was the big twist.
Well, there was the even smaller twist, and that's Kevin's father. Which Shyamalan did plan that, because he talked about that years ago.
Yeah.
When Split came out, he was saying the things he kind of planned. He's like, you know, you see that the Beast is born in a train yard. You see him leave flowers on the train platform, and you're like, what's he doing? Why is he going into an empty train? And earlier, his psychiatrist, Dr. Exposition, that's why she's there.
Yeah.
She literally is like, you know, because Kevin's father left on a train, and there's all these subtle hints.
Yeah.
And like this movie treats it like a really big deal. And I think to some people it was. But like if you paid attention, you're like, yeah, I thought that. Like his dad was on the same train. What you didn't know is it looked like he was already suffering from DID as a young child. Because you see his dad's leaving, and he's like...
He's reading the pamphlet about DID.
I'll be back, my boy. And you see him like, don't leave me with mom.
Well, apparently, if you pay attention to this movie, it turns out when you see the flashbacks and you hear Kevin talk to Sarah Paulson and stuff, it actually, at one point, somebody says, he left to get you help.
Yeah.
So he went on the train to go meet somebody who was an expert in DID and bring them back.
Which could have been
to help Kevin.
Could have been Dr. Exposition.
It could have been. But just the fact that that's where David... That's where
Dad was going.
Dad was going. And they have this pretty awesome cut to the other shot where you see Dad sit down on the train.
Yeah.
And then the camera, like, rolls down the...
Pulls back
down the train.
Right. Darkens out on a train seat to kind of cut...
Yeah, through. Just a little bit of darkness, right. And it cuts over to the opening sequence from Unbreakable.
Like the old door jam cut, you know?
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, we're now it's 2003 again. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that was a neat cut. Yeah.
Pretty obvious, but it was neat.
Yeah.
But that's all set up into... what was I going to say? That's a big deal.
Yeah, and it's one of the smaller plot twists.
Yeah, it's the smallest overall plot twist.
Yeah.
I was going to have one more thing about that concept, but let's move on to the
next one. Well, we have the final big one, which is Sarah Paulson never meant to. I just
remember.
You lit up. Go ahead.
I thought there'd be more of a conflict when that reveal comes out.
Yeah,
I thought that would be like the big point in the movie to make them stop fighting, and it kind of does. But he kind of more immediately turns on
Glass.
Yeah.
I thought that would make him, because I thought everyone thought that if that was the thing, that was going to be the catalyst for Dunn and the Beast fighting. You're unbreakable. My dad died. That's what made me this. Now I hate you and you're my mortal enemy, but it didn't play out that way.
It was more
like... He just kind of turned on Glass and you're like, oh, I guess he's going to turn on Elijah Price now.
So. Now, what would have been really interesting is if the person who was dying across the way from David Dunn was Kevin's dad.
Well, if you want to retcon and make that like...
I think it'd be a pretty fun thing. Like if you, like, it pans back and you see the man, like as the blood seeps out of
that
the wound.
Really long, the ridiculous long take of like zooming in closer and closer. Like, I gotta tell you this, the reason I'm looking at you is because... Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
One, in a few moments you will be the only survivor of this train crash. Secondly, you don't have a scratch on you.
Yeah, but that person died, that'd be fun if that was actually
Kevin's
dad. That'd be
Kevin's dad. Senior.
Thank God they didn't try to like retcon, like put a scene in with that, like a CGI younger Bruce Willis.
Well,
or anything.
Speaking of, they did a really good. They took a deleted scene from Unbreakable and put it in this movie.
They did, that's right.
It was really cool.
Yeah, they cut it from the original because it's more superfluous or something we already don't know, but it serves a really good purpose in this movie.
Yeah, because David Dunn's thinking back to the time when he saw.
There was a time when I fought against this, and there was like nothing I wanted more than like, no, I don't want to be this, and my son used to cry himself to sleep knowing I wasn't going to go do this.
Yeah, and then, because he walked in and son was like, I know who you are, it's okay, I won't tell anyone, and that's...
Well, okay, you also have to think about this. What does every kid think of their parents?
As ideally? A hero.
Right, like you look
as
up
a hero.
To them.
Yeah.
Right.
Every kid's mom and dad are heroes. At least that's how it should be when you're younger.
Well,
And if you're Kevin Wendell Crumb.
And then we get older and wiser.
Well, Sarah Paulson points that out to the kid as well when they're sitting there and he's like, my dad doesn't belong in here. He doesn't belong in this insane asylum. Like, he's fine. It's fine. He was just... He needs to leave, and she goes, everyone.
So you're telling me your father.
Yeah, and then she starts psychoanalyzing him, and he ends up storming out, and it's like, oh,
I love
that fucking excuse he gives Sarah Paulson.
That's like one of my excuses.
Oh, God.
That was like my level of, like, I gotta cover this up.
Right, yeah.
And he was in it, bro. He was in it.
Yeah. I'm glad they brought him back. Last time I saw this kid, he was in, like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as Baron Von Strucker's, like, a nephew.
Oh, yeah. No,
he was, like,
yeah.
He was the new head of Hydra for a little bit.
Oh, my God.
For a couple episodes.
He's got some creepy fucking eyes.
Yeah. Like, he's got like shark eyes. Well, same with Anya Taylor. What's your last name?
Joy, I think. No,
Anya Joy Taylor. Anya
Taylor Joy.
The girl that plays Casey.
Yeah. She's got shark eyes. They're just like her irises meet her pupils. Like it's just pure dark black. And you're like,
and she has this weird pursed lip. Like she's gonna like have like a long anteater tongue to come out.
She has shark eyes, man. It's like, wow. But I think that's the next part of her appeal when they cast her. That's probably how she got her acting started. She has like these really dark, unique, almost exotic eyes where you're like, okay, yeah, cast her because that headshot jumped out at me. Like,
I haven't seen any phenomenal acting come out of Alexandria Daddario, but she's got those piercing crystal blue eyes.
Right.
So.
Like literally crystal. You're like, jeez.
Yeah.
Eva Green also has like those emerald green eyes.
Yeah.
Bluish green.
Mm-hmm. Any eyes in the acting world that you're a big fan of, Nick?
I don't know. The trailer for Battle Angel Alita has big ol' eyes. That was pretty nice.
Stop staring at me with them big ol' eyes.
So, I don't know. Unless they're fake eyes, I don't care.
They're CG'd,
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
What?
Well,
what's going on here?
Alita's? Yeah, hers are CG'd to be that
big. Well, she's completely...
Well, I'm
What's her name? Salazar? I don't know about that at all. Ramona Salazar doesn't remotely look like that, so I think she's completely CG.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I'm like, Ramona
Salazar. Well, no, she does look like that, but they've edited her face so it looks more anime.
Okay, maybe. Yeah.
They've moved things around and struck her nose.
I went to look at who the actress was. I'm like, oh, so she's completely CG because the actress looks like nothing.
They probably did, yeah.
Because I was looking for her lower face, and like I was trying to ignore her eyes to see if that's the same face, and like even the face looks different.
They made her mouth bigger. They made her nose smaller. They made her eyes huge. Yeah. They definitely went full anime with it.
Yeah.
Speaking of eyes and glass. Will Smith's eyes are like seeking deeper and deeper inside himself as his cheeks. And it's just like he's always looking very sleepy to me.
Will Smith?
I mean, Bruce Smith.
Bruce Willis.
I'm just imagining, like, when I went pee for that 15 minutes, was there like a Will Smith cameo when he's like, yo, I'm in the insane stuff. Hey, yo, why am I in here?
And another thing about him, too, they're all getting old. They should all just get rid of their eyeballs. Who cares? Right.
Take them out.
Well, I was going to say, I knew who you meant when you said Will Smith. I knew you meant Bruce Willis. But, like, I was going to say, the problem is that he hasn't done a Die Hard movie in a few years, and that's what brings him back to life. So he has to do
argue that the last Die Hard movie was fucking horrible.
It brought him back. It healed him.
He was
The last good movie he was in was probably Red. And that's whatever. Just...
Red 2, thank you very much.
Yeah, okay, there Red 2. Second. Yeah, you're right, there was Red a second. Yeah. Red 2 was good. Yeah, those are good movies.
The one thing is, Looper was pretty good. He was pretty good in that.
He was decent.
Okay.
I didn't like Looper.
Yeah. Well, he was good in that.
Too many different plot threads.
He's more of like a time traveler.
I haven't seen that movie all the way through,
so I don't know.
Very varying degrees of and giving a shit.
But there's time travel. Yeah. There's psychic abilities. It's
a movie. As Jeff Daniels in that movie says, don't worry, it's time travel.
You know what else is a movie?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
This one.
It absolves you.
Yes, this is a movie.
This is also a movie.
This is also a movie.
We were at the end there with the big true reveal.
Yeah, with the big true twist. It's Sarah Paulson.
People gave them a name, by the way.
We've got the Irish gang. What are they called?
It's called the Shamrocks. Shamrock Society. Is what people are calling
That makes sense.
There is a secret cabal that for like 10,000 years erases any evidence of like superhero or super person.
Hey, did M. Night Shyamalan do Cloverfield?
No.
That's okay. Matt Reeves.
Gotcha.
No, I made that joke though. Like this is a backdoor thing by Cloverfield.
Yeah.
It's also in the Cloverfield universe.
Whoa!
Another Cloverfield anthology.
Clover.
I did not see that.
Shamrock Society. Yeah. Interesting.
It's alliterative and it kind of fits with the hero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we talk about how this organization doesn't make any fucking sense?
Mm-hmm.
Continue.
Okay, continue, yeah. Tell me.
What was the whole thing? Like, Sarah Paulson throughout the entire thing is trying to convince these people that they're not superheroes.
Huge. Yeah. She said, I was trying to do this peacefully. I was trying to get you to disbelieve. You
know? That was, like, her whole intent to do that?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then it didn't work out.
And her alternative afterwards just, okay, kill them?
Terminate them.
No. Yeah. There's three steps.
Oh,
step one, convince them that they're not super, and if you manage to do that, then you're good, because then they won't go out and do super things and we can let them live.
Right.
Step two, if they continue to believe that they are super, before we go and do step three, lobotomize them.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They were talking about the surgery and the operation.
Then step three is if the lobotomy doesn't work or if they try to fight back then we kill them.
But they're grossly incompetent on the lobotomy part. And also they have, like, what, three people working that whole facility? Right. So if you're not even going to put the money or effort to do either of those things, why not just kill them?
Three people working in the east wing of the facility.
Right.
And it's funny how specific that is.
Right.
Because when you're in the kids' comm center overhearing dad getting arrested with Kevin, you hear her, Sarah Paulson, say, like, bring them to this hospital to put them in the east wing of this hospital.
Yes.
And it's like, that's an oddly specific thing to yell out loud. Just take them to the hospital. We'll put them in the wing when you get there.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but they have to sit specifically this wing for the thing. And that sort of sets up the whole thing where, like, the whole area is guarded off. You only have two orderlies, and then Sarah Paulson shows up from 9 to 5, essentially. And that's it. And when you say that she's grossly incompetent at her job.
Yes.
Kind of. I mean,
I think that's the idea that leads into the final.
They put all the cameras up, and what does Samuel L. Jackson do? He hacks them, and he overwrites the thing with him just doing cartwheels and spins in the hallway.
Right.
You know, as opposed to what he actually did was remove the part out of the MRI, the lobotomy machine, and and all that stuff. So they needed to have some more fail-safes.
If they knew how dangerous he was, they probably would have lobotomized him long ago. Then,
well, yeah,
if they
weren't going to
straight up kill
him,
they probably would have just done that.
Yeah.
Also, like at the end of Unbreakable, is like they say, like he got arrested or whatever. Did they keep him in that facility for a long time, or do they just move him to a different facility?
Yeah, the Orange Man.
And if so, then they should have.
No, like, no, Mr. Glass. The Orange Man's dead.
He got strangled.
Oh, yeah. Because
I don't know if this is like an actual facility, or if this is like they're all holding this place hold to pretend they're doctors or whatever. I just don't really understand.
She just came into the proceedings, or she just got transferred into the facility at the beginning when they apprehend them.
Yeah, she because remember the guy who, the POV shot of him giving the mug to Mr. Glass and the whole thing, he says like, she comes in here and changes all the procedures and you know, mess with our stuff. It was good. It was just you and me, wasn't it? Yeah. It's all right, though. You got two new friends.
She was like a moth to the flame. She was drawn there because of the the activity happening with
and
the
And it's sort of implied that this is her first, like, big project, too. Because she gets it, because especially at the end when she's explaining
And she's like, she's like, thank you for giving me this chance.
Yeah, and she's standing in front of all the people at the dining room.
Which, what was with that? Is everybody there part of that organization?
Everyone but that one, like, couple that gets up and leaves. There's always one couple in both the scenes where we see that. One couple gets up and walks out.
Yeah.
And then everyone...
Okay, time to ring the glass. Let's all listen to Secret Society
here. I don't know. Yeah. Despite them all, with all the exposition, you figured they would throw some more with that, but...
That's a comic criticism.
It'd be a little bit more solid exposition.
Yeah, there's a lot of people... I stand by it. I think that's
legit. People criticism. Are like, it comes out of nowhere. It's completely unfounded. Right. And I'm like... My sort of challenge to it is, what's the theme? What is Glass? What is Mr. Glass's one thing? What does he believe about comic books?
Yeah.
This is historical documentation. This this is sort of, we know these people exist. Superman is based off of someone that might have existed long ago through tales and folklore and through people passing it on. So in his mind, if that's his core central belief and he's the mastermind, why haven't we seen these people before? Why haven't they ever come to light? They've probably been erased by some opposing secret organization that wants to get rid of them. So that's why he is, in the ultimate twist, he's like 10 steps ahead of them, because he figured one day, if these people go live and they get apprehended, these people are going to come and get them.
Yep.
So like his one central belief
really
is that.
It really helps that the second we see Sarah Paulson talking to him for the first time, it's like, your every move will be monitored. We put cameras on every single part of this fucking building, inside and outside.
Yeah.
And so there's nothing you can do to escape or do anything bad. And she does it specifically because she knows that he's going to find out that David's there. And him and David have a relationship. And you know that he's going to... I'm picturing The Dark Knight Returns, like the cartoon, where Joker is sort of let go, like he's given up.
Right.
And then he hears the thing, like, Batman's back. And it, what?
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
back?
By the way, I'm glad you brought that up. Because the twist at the end of Split, I guess we might as well do it now because you mentioned that. I heard there was like another alternate take of what they were going to do that was based off The Dark Knight Returns. And the original reveal of the twist... But because the studio got intervened, it was going to be a psych ward watching the news that Kevin Wendell, this man is named Kevin Wendell Crumb, whatever. It was going to pan through the psych ward. You're like, why are we in a psych ward? What's going on? You were going to see all these people watching the news. Like, oh my God, you were going to pan over to a lonely window, and it was going to be Elijah Price sitting staring at the window in kind of a catatonic state. And then he was going to look up at the television and... the eyes were going to start twitching, and maybe a smile was going to curve over his lips. And I'm like, why didn't they go with that? Because the studio's like, no, you need like the big, you need Bruce Willis, you need the hero.
Right.
You want Bruce Willis. And it's like, okay. The actual twist is so dumb. It's like a completely unrelated person that there's no way you could jump from that to, there was this guy they put in prison 15 years ago. What was his name? And it's like, that has nothing to do with what's happening on the television.
Well,
Mrs. Exposition, like,
Mrs. Okay.
Here we go again.
You have a lot of exposition people in this movie.
That's Shyamalan. Everybody
all
is
three
like
of these films.
Yeah, Bucky exposition, little child exposition, 5-year-old exposition, like all the other characters that aren't main characters.
We
in
can't
Shyamalan
show you
films.
Something, so have someone say
right,
it.
I have someone say it in the background.
They did the David Dunn thing for one particular reason. If all they have is Elijah Price, everyone be like, oh, he's going to recruit him for something bad. But what?
Yeah.
But we have David look at it and see, we know he's a hero. We know he's going out. He's going to hunt this guy down.
Right.
And that gets us hyped for the battle.
The confrontation.
Yes.
Which sort of doesn't happen. Which that's what disappointed a lot of
the movie. It doesn't.
It doesn't.
Yeah. There's that original confrontation in the warehouse, which is fun.
It was a lot of GoPro footage. There's a lot of Bruce Willis looking into a GoPro and getting shaken about if you catch on to that.
And then there's that whole thing where, you know, she's just trying to hit his hand, which is very similar to how in a real fight normally goes. But these are superpower people. But I thought that chillier died. At one point...
Oh, when they throw the fucking table at her? Yeah.
Like, David throws the table at the Beast casts it and throws it at the cheerleader. Apparently, she broke her arm.
Yeah. Yeah, you're like, but what? I'm like,
she's dead.
Yeah, they fucking...
That hit her in the head.
Yeah, that was funny.
I feel that we were on the final twist in this movie. It's like, I agree with all the criticism that feels like it's unjustified and it comes out of nowhere. Because I think it's because of the exposition. Because I think, here's what I mean to say. It's well-founded.
Yeah.
I think it's a pretty good twist.
Yeah.
It's just the execution feels very
off.
Up, here it is. Oh, wait. Are they drowning him in a fucking puddle? Oh, my God. Is this it? Oh, my God. He's dead.
Yeah.
And you're just like, wow, there maybe should have been... The execution should have probably been a little better.
Yeah.
Or they should have at least been apprehended alive.
Yeah.
Maybe for a sequel.
You say the end, but this actually isn't the end. Because
there's another, like, 10 minutes of the film.
Yeah. The actual end is the footage...
Hitting the news stations
hits his mom's computer... And I think also
it's like a live stream.
It's the recordings from the insane asylum go to Casey's computer, Mr. Glass's mom's computer, and then Joseph's computer.
And they work together
and
they
all meet up and
distribute it.
Yep.
And all I could think is after
when it hits the air,
everyone's like looking at their phones, like bling 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 bling.
I think everyone has the same thought.
I'm like, that's gonna be called a hoax in like 10 minutes.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. Like, oh, everyone's like fucking fake, because they're all sitting like, I can't wait to watch. We all gathered here to watch, and I would have loved the comedic ending. Fucking bullshit.
Yeah.
What?
Within 24 hours, that would have been debunked.
If they did that at the end, I would have stood and applauded.
I know,
and
like, I would have. Lolled. Everybody thought it's like, no one's gonna believe.
And
everyone's
I would have been. Fuck you.
Wow, these YouTube prank videos are getting really elaborate.
Yeah.
Well, everyone that's watching it, that's what their face looks like. They look mildly amused. They don't even look like, oh my. Like, here's how a good execution of the ending goes. You kind of pull like a Buffy season 7 when like every girl that's a potential slayer gets empowered.
Yeah.
It like pans around the world and you see them feel it. You see like a girl playing softball and you see her like grip her bat tighter and kind of starts like, yeah, they're all feeling the power.
She's like holding it and she's like a little nervous and then she's.
And she gets confident. And she starts like grinning and like, I got power.
She's like, oh, wow.
The ending should have been maybe 8 or 6, not too many people, 6 random people around the world seeing this footage and you see their eyes light up or they do something like that with their face. What does that tell us? These are the others.
Yeah,
these are the other ones hiding their abilities.
I can do that.
I do that. There should be this look of like, my God, you know.
I'm not the only one.
Like, yeah.
This city needs my help. Like, you should be able to tell that they're also powered metahumans.
Yeah.
And,
like, that's a better execution. So, like, he gets the right idea. Secret cabal. And he gets the mastermind was always ahead. Those are good ideas, but the execution is like, man.
And then, at the very end of the movie, after we see all the heroes get activated.
Sagat the Sanshiro in space is like, yes, it is happening. This is as it was foretold 20 years ago.
Yes.
Sega Saturn, Shiro. Custom black. And you're like, my God, Sagata Sanshiro is the original metahuman. It's all part of the Sega universe.
Oh, that's one of 5 alternate endings, I'm sure.
I don't know why I came up with that.
I was going to say it then pans over to the Hollywood sign. It zooms in and we see Seth Green with a bald head and a gray outfit laughing his ass off while looking at his phone. But because we have the heroes being revealed, why not have a villain be revealed?
Seth Green?
Yeah.
Don't you mean Jesse Eisenberg?
No, I'm not. I'm going with Dr. Evil, baby.
Oh.
He's the new Dr. Evil.
That's a deep cut
his hair
gold member
out
reference.
And everything. Yeah, that was actually a pretty good sneak in there.
Yeah. Because, like,
just as good as Sagat the Sanshiro.
Well, I think Sagat the Sanshiro is actually better.
Yeah. We now explain how he had the abilities he had.
Yeah.
He did it on television for years and then disappeared because the Sony Corporation killed him. But it wasn't the Sony Corporation. It was the Japan arm, the branch of the Shamrock Society.
Nice.
There you go.
He's thinking about this too hard.
It's fun.
I just thought it'd be a fun choice. You might as well Shyamalan the fuck out of it.
All right, final thoughts.
I'm surprised I didn't get like Haley Joel Osment to look at his phone and be all like, oh my God, there's more of us. Yeah. Or something.
Oh, there you go.
I think everyone had that idea.
I'm all for a Shyamalan universe.
Yeah. Everyone yeah. thought like maybe Haley Joel Osment like, could have been there with Bruce Willis. Like, well, look at the TV. Like, whoa.
That'd been cute. Or like Mark Wahlberg comes in with a fake tree. Like, oh my god, there's other people that have
powers
too.
Yeah, he's carrying around a little potted plant.
Do you hear that? Tree says, yeah.
They told me I couldn't talk to plants, but I could. I think I have abilities.
Which, oh no, that means this happens before the happening. Oh no.
What? No.
What? No.
And then I'm picturing, like, you see, like, Will Smith walking down the street, and, like...
Will who?
Will Smith.
Oh, okay, just making
actual
sure.
Will Smith. All right, and you see him signing up for a space program.
Oh,
my God.
To tie into After Earth.
Oh, yes, right.
Yes.
My name is Rooster Cogburn, or not Rooster Cogburn, because that's True Grit. What was his name? Phoenix.
Buster Scruggs.
Cypher Rage.
Yeah, Cypher Rage.
Cypher Rage.
I almost said Fearless Phoenix.
The stupidest fucking name.
What was his name?
It
was
greatest name.
It was something like Fearless Phoenix or Cypher Rage. What the fuck?
This was the character's actual name?
Yes.
Yeah, his name is Cypher Rage.
Yes.
He's known that's the one he did with his son, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Where he has no fear.
Right.
Like, there's a creature to hunt you and can, like, sense and smell and taste your fear.
Which, okay. Bruce Willis looked a lot more alive in this than Will Smith did in After Earth.
Yeah. apparently, having no fear means you have no personality at all. But, all right.
That was just an excuse.
Or acting ability.
Yeah, well.
To be fair, that is the only Will Smith movie where Will Smith doesn't act like Will Smith.
That's true.
It is interesting.
That's probably why it was such a big failure.
Yeah, he just acts like an awful.
It's a vehicle for his son, mostly.
Yeah.
He stays behind on this ship, injured, and Jaden goes out there.
I think Jaden was good with Karate Kid. He didn't need another movie.
Right.
But, all right.
Anyways, final thoughts.
Yeah, final thoughts on Glass.
Final thoughts.
Glass itself.
Just Glass.
Okay, Just Glass, 7 out of 10. C+.
I don't know. You didn't ask me my opinion before if I actually liked the movie.
But do you like the movie?
I don't know. Every other day, I think of different things. Like, when we left the movie, I was, like, kind of okay with it. Then one day, I'm like, oh, you know, that's pretty good. The other day, this fucking sucked. And so, like, I'm constantly wavering behind
it. Well, give me a range. What's your lowest and your highest score?
I don't know. 1 to 20 or something.
Out of 10?
Sure, why not?
Okay.
There's like a lot of good scenes in it.
I feel like you're taking this seriously, but all right.
Yeah, no, because who gives a shit? Anyway, it's like... Well, let me explain
myself.
Go ahead,
let him finish. Jesus.
Sorry.
I'm saying there's a lot of good parts to it, but overall I just felt like, whatever. Like, the ending that other people bitch about, I'm one of those people, I don't like it. So, yeah.
I didn't think it was bad, but honestly, like...
I thought it was fucking garbage, but whatever.
You know, it's M. Night.
Yeah. So
I'm like, so you mean it's like Unbreakable and Split.
No, those were both better written. I don't know. I feel this is more as like part of like M. Night Shyamalan's filmography more than like a film by itself.
Yeah.
It's like he has like his ups and downs. Someone described it pretty good. Like his filmography is like the rise of a phoenix or something like that. In the beginning, he's like he's blazing high. Then he has like some downs. But then he rises from the ashes to come back again. So I assume the next film is not going to be very good.
When did he rise?
Today?
No.
Oh, back then, like after like The Visit like Split, that was like his renaissance.
That was his
beforehand, like you said, After Earth, they wouldn't even mention like he directed it back then.
Yeah.
Nick and I said, we literally went to see Arrival with Amy Adams, and there was the trailer for Split, and the entire theater was howling in like rage laughter.
Yeah.
At first, you see a little bit of what it's about, and then it says, director M. Night Shyamalan. And everyone in the theater, you audibly heard, because you see like, the beast is coming for you guys. We just start losing our shit laughing. Like, oh my God, this is going to be the greatest movie ever or absolute shit, and you can't tell. That was the reaction to the trailer for Split in the theater we were sitting in.
Yeah, nice. And that turned out pretty good. So
that's
why I'm thinking, like, you know, I'm fascinated by M. Night.
Yeah, I think you're with a lot of people on that.
Right.
At least he has an identity.
He's just he's just fun to watch.
Yeah,
you kind of wind him up and let him go.
That's why I don't hate this movie. I'm fascinated by it because it constantly moves in my head. Like, I like this scene, but I hate
this. It's almost
this
like watching Tim.
We didn't talk about the other best scene. Like, there's Kevin Wendell Crumb's dying and all the other good scenes. There's the scene where she convinces them they're not special, and it's like a lot of long takes.
That's right. Yeah,
and like you watch their hearts break. Well, except Sam Jackson because he's playing catatonic. But I think there's almost a moment where she almost gets through to him because you see his eyes twitching, and you're like, he's trying so hard not to like break his catatonic kind of
play. Well, if you notice, he twitches the entire time, the entire movie, until you see him
He slit the guy's throat.
With glass.
Yeah, with glass. Yeah.
I think I might have to put that over the horror to Kevin's death. It has to be the scene with the Sarah Paulson being, "It's so nice to meet you." It's the scene you see from the trailer where all three of them are in a room. Yeah. And you're just like, all of them are just so like broken at the end. Like, oh my God, maybe it really was just...
Yeah, David starts to believe it, like, too.
We did do the MRI. You suffered frontal lobe damage, and that's why you think you can do these things. And he's just like, my God, maybe she's right. And then Kevin, you see that, I think it's Patricia. She's legitimately like, but I rock climbed. We found like hours of videos of you practicing rock climbing. Maybe it was one of the others inside of you. Oh, my God.
It's the second that. He's like so depressed. The second he started to like doubt himself, the personality guys. It's like really like gripping.
It's really sad. You're like, oh.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure they're not, but are they?
Right.
Yeah, but I mean, like, then you see in the MRI and then in the lobby room with Mr. Glass, him as the beast climbing on the wall. You're like, no human can do that.
We saw at the beginning of the movie, he was completely upside down, Spider-Maning it towards the girls, and you're like, oh, hey, okay.
Well, he was
on a pipe.
On a pipe, yeah.
And that's hard to do.
People can still do that, but no.
Right. So, anyway, Madison, you.
But yeah, I retconned the best scene back to the score.
Yeah, no, I get you. But I'm at like a C minus for this. It's all right. It's
So 7 out of 10, 1 to 20, C minus.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. I give it a blue apple.
Because
our rating systems are all out of whack, apparently.
Do you guys have a legit rating system? I don't listen to the show.
Normally, we do one out of 10.
Okay.
You know? But yeah.
Seriously, maybe like a 6.
I'd say 7.
Yeah.
For me,
But here's another question outside of a score. Is this a befitting end? Okay, minus execution. In your heart, when you just think about the big ideas proposed, that this ends with a sad, morose... almost bittersweet. It's a tragedy. This is a Shakespearean tragedy.
Yeah, this is a tragedy.
This was just the rating for Glass itself. I was then going to ask you guys your rating for the whole trilogy.
But I'm saying for Glass, the Glass ends the trilogy, though. Like, when you think about the final ideas proposed, there's a secret cabal. Maybe the world isn't ready for supers. They die pretty hard.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God, they were setting up this massive Avengers-like finale. Nope, drowned in a puddle. Fuck you, the end.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of like it.
I do too. Idea. Now that I'm thinking about it, like the big idea in the overall picture of it,
like for
this
it to be extremely tragic.
Right,
this is a tragic ending.
That you guys are talking about.
That there are supers, but the world's not ready for them, and there's someone out there who takes it all apart.
Also, it was always about Sam Jackson. It was only ever about proving his beliefs to the world.
Yeah.
So that's all this was. It wasn't about the Avengers finale. It wasn't about David Dunn coming face to face with the Beast. All of that was a big sham. It was all about, Mom, get you and me know my true dream. Get my dream out there, even though I've done terrible, horrible things.
Right.
I'm a sympathetic character now.
Yeah, that fucking bothered me, though.
Here's the footage.
Yeah.
Because, like, okay.
He's made a hero, kind of, in retrospect.
Well, not that bit. Not really. The thing that bugged me about it was the fact that, like, Joseph and Casey are like, Joseph's like, my dad was a hero. Casey's like, Kevin was misunderstood, and I could have gotten through to him if he hadn't.
Like, there's good personalities in there. You guys only see the horror. There's 20 other people in there that are good people.
Yeah. Right. And then you had Mr. Glass and his mom. Hmm. And, you know, she's like proud of him for being the mastermind.
He was spectacular, my dad. He was spectacular.
Like, he murdered people. Hundreds of people.
Yeah.
And
that's what I said.
Just
in the end, they don't take up the weight of that idea. They kind of make him, they retcon.
Dot, a mother's love?
Right.
But then, then the three of them team up to get the footage out to the world. If they knew that she supported his murderous ways, why the fuck are they hanging out with her?
She's anonymous, clearly. But like I said, don't think about the execution. Just the idea itself to me feels really good inside. I'm like, I like the idea of a tragedy. I love that. That's the idea. The big idea is it's more of a tragic.
You know,
and there never was going to be a fight. There was never going to be this big.
I wasn't expecting that. I just didn't expect, like, I don't know. The theme seemed really muddled to me. I don't really feel that way the way you do.
It's interesting. As a kid, I always was asking my mom, why don't the bad guys ever? Why don't we ever have a sad ending to a movie? Why don't the bad guys ever win?
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of do in this one.
Yeah, that's the whole.
Yeah, and to be honest, like, I have waited for a movie where the bad guys win. We had obviously Infinity War last year, but we know that's not the end of that story.
That might be the new that might be the new norm at this point. We're like, ooh, the bad guys win. People like that. Like,
The bad guys winning is a thing that happens. But like, honestly.
Yeah.
it's not something you're used to seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it.
Well, I guess technically it's like if you think that the Shadow Organization is the bad guys, then they don't.
Well, I kind of do because they kill a hero.
Yeah.
They also kill two villains.
They kill our expectations of what we thought was going to happen.
We were
hoping for superheroes to exist in this world. I honestly thought they were going to go to the Osaka building, they were going to have the big brawl, and it was going to end definitely with Bruce Willis dying.
Right.
And probably the Beast dying as well. But there was going to have that scene where we see other heroes step up.
Right.
You know?
I think there was a rumor they thought that here's an example of what people thought they might expect. The rumor is that Kevin beats Bruce Willis, but at the last second develops a hero persona, a 25th personality. When everything is unlocked, when he finds out everything Mr. Glass did, and Casey gets through to him, and in him is born a new persona thanks to Casey and yada yada, all the things that have happened. And I'm like, that's lame if it has bad execution, but I understand why people would want something like that.
Because
that's your hopeful ending, and maybe he can carry the franchise as almost like a Legion-style movie series.
Yeah.
Going from personality to personality, and you don't know what's real. And they could have almost done like a Legion-like thing had they gone on with Kevin Windelcrumb.
Yeah, but
hard to top Legion.
Yeah.
But that was one of the rumors, and I'm like, at first I didn't like hearing about it, but I'm like,
you know,
that just shows you where people's minds were with what
I can tell you right now, that there was a parallel universe where that happened.
Right. It seemed almost likely. Like, I bet you they would bring up, he has a hero persona that's deep down in there that gets broken out.
Yeah.
And then he takes on Glass, or he takes on the Shamrock Society or something like that.
Yeah.
But that's not how it went.
Yeah, we've been talking for a while.
Yeah, 7 out of 10, 6 out of 10, or 1 to 20, 6 out of 10.
Yeah,
6, 7.
Okay.
It kind of bases it, all four of us just end up being a
Yeah, and a then seat. Just for the whole trilogy, like as a whole, the story, I can tell, Nick, you're a little iffy on the ending.
Yeah.
You love the first two, but the ending's a little iffy for you. So what do you rate the whole trilogy?
I don't know, probably like a 7, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know.
Between
like a 7 and an 8, because those two films really are great. So they kind of outweigh. And I like a lot of parts of Glass. Okay. I want to stress that. I don't fucking despise this film.
Except sometimes when I do. It's not a sum, it's parts. It's one of the whole, like, the sum can't mean.
Yeah. You know. What can I say? I'm split, but I'm bummed. I did it! I got another one! Fuck. I did it!
You stole mine. Fine.
God. Damn it. The villain wins.
Oh, yes.
Okay, he brought it home there.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
All right. I think that pretty much summarizes everything.
Oh, I think that's it.
That one phrase.
The only thing I think to add is, like, if they did continue the series, what kind of a hero would you want to see be?
Nothing. I don't want to see anyone.
Right. It's a definitive ending.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. They went into this one. Yeah, M. Night did great wrapping this up. We don't need any more.
What could they do?
He said, "Hey, listen, there's that Glass, and that's it. I only ever planned at the most two, maybe maybe three at the most." And
yeah.
Well, then maybe we can
mythos.
We'll just get James McAvoy in another X-Men film, and we'll be good.
Well, we'll just we'll sit here and we'll wait for the eventual Devil sequel.
Oh yes.
Oh my God.
The one M. Night Shyamalan movie we didn't mention during this review.
Well, I've been waiting forever for part two of that series.
Oh, I've been waiting for him to get his hands back on
part
Avatar.
Of the Night series or whatever.
Actually,
he called it.
I know Netflix is doing it.
It was going to be like,
well, no, I actually there was a
anthological
thing,
or something like that.
Yeah.
Up until like a year and a half ago, they were still rumors that they were going to try and pull The Last Airbender out of its grave and make a sequel to it with the same cast as the first one.
Good fucking luck.
Netflix got a hold of that.
Got a hold of that with the original writers, and they're not going to let M. Night within fucking 500 miles. Yeah.
It's not M. Night's fault.
No, it's not, but everybody blames him anyways.
Be nice.
Hey, guys, you don't know. Maybe the sequel would have been really good.
Well, I'm waiting for the Sign sequel, definitely.
Yeah, well, if they were going to keep the original cast of
Mel Gibson versus aliens in space.
Yes.
A bunch of white people playing Native Americans. Nah, I'm good.
He's nuts.
They
He'll
were
do
Inuit.
It.
Well, that's Native, yet. That means they're technically Siberian if we get into genetics.
I'm definitely, I would love to see Mel Gibson and like a bunch of humans go to the aliens planet.
I don't want to see Mel Gibson do shit anymore. Mel Gibson's a bigot.
They make crop circles on the aliens planet and they're like, what the fuck is this? But it's like big dicks and shit.
Yeah.
Which I can see Mel Gibson doing.
Yeah.
I'm going to check in cornfields.
And like they're boarding up their homes and windows and stuff, and you see like a beaver come through, a beaver puppet.
Hello. Or he's yelling all of his things. He yelled in his rant outside the window to the aliens. You were supposed to suck my dick before the jacuzzi. Why don't you smile and blow me? And they're just, and they're like, like, man, this guy's fucking crazy. We gotta get out of here.
There you go.
Alrighty, people.
Okay.
M. Night Shyamalan, because people actually pronounce it.
Shyamalan.
That was Glass.
That was Glass.
That was the Glass trilogy. Yeah.
Welcome back, Nick. Thank you for coming down. It's hard to get a hold of you for these.
Oh yeah, no. Thanks. This is what my third episode or fourth or whatever.
I think third, because we did Pokemon twice, because we had some audio issues.
Oh right,
we did Solo. Solo.
Oh, you're there for Solo.
Oh, that's right. I did see Solo.
Nice. I forgot about that.
And so then the next one you're going to be in.
What?
Surprise, you're doing the Dragon Ball episode.
What? Hopefully. Oh, my God.
Fingers crossed. I don't know if we're going to have time to do it, but I'd love to do a Broly episode with you.
Oh, my goodness.
Just talk about Broly. Who is he? Why? When? Where? Yeah. How?
Oh, bro.
The five essential questions.
Yeah.
Link.
Yeah. And when, look forward to our Valentine's Day episode.
That'll be fun.
Woo! All right, folks. Thank you all so much for listening.
Thank you for sitting through this.
Yeah. Everyone say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye. Ciao, folks. Some ASMR for all you people.
Can you not?
Are you done?
Can you not?
Yeah. Are you done?
Please.
You're not keeping this all in, are you? Oh,
yes, I am.
No, oh, shit, not. Stop.
3BetweenWorlds podcast was created by David Kennedy Fodder and Derek Dillon. It is hosted by David Kennedy Fodder, Derek Dillon, Madison Sneddon, and Nick Mata. It is edited by David Kennedy Fodder, and it is produced by David Kennedy Fodder, Derek Dillon, and Madison Sneddon. Intro music by Midair Machine from the freemusicarchive.org. And outro music by Kevin MacLeod via IncompTech.com with cover art by David Jones. Thank you so much for being unbroken, for being the pure, and for listening. And we'll see you in World 214.
Fucking shit.
You can do this.
Okay, so pause. Oh, God, you're listening. The Think Between Worlds podcast was created by Dave. Why am I fucking Macho Man?
It's all right.
The Think Between Worlds podcast.
Say something horde-like.
I know, okay, I will.
Say something beast-like, then do it.
You gotta cut it.
Do it horde.
So I can breathe.
Mm. Okay.
I don't have to hear.
You're pure!
That's all. He does impure a lot.
Yeah. The unbroken.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Broken. The unpure. The Think Between Worlds podcast was.
Sorry, that's on me.
Because I saw my face. I was watching you.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Why did I do this? Why did we do this? I hope. Are they gone? Is my dad's truck? Are like, see what trucks are out there.
Are they still here?
Yeah.
Because I bet they're listening. Like, what the fuck
there
is
he? There are cars down there. So
let me see.
If they're gone, this is even. Okay. If they're here, it's even funnier.
Yes.
That's why.
Okay. All right. Okay. So three.
Shit.
It's okay. Two. Shut up. One.
It is hosted by...
We got the first
yes,
frame.
Yes, we did. Okay. We did. Sorry, I held it in as long as I could.
I'm actually getting lightheaded, so I'm glad we stopped.
You should also see the fucking... The
waveforms are nuts.
That's why I started like... I started going over it.
It's going to be awesome. Okay,
so I was saying, David, Madison, intro music by Midair Machine from the... Oh, we ended at .org.
Yes. You hear Nick outside. Get in here, you ass asshole.
Hey, Matt,
it's
actually not bad.
I was waiting for like a minute, thinking like, oh, all right. I can't hear them, but I can.
All right, last line.
All right.
Thank you so much for being the...
Do it, do it, do it.